Understanding Creativity Podcast. I'm your host, Mari Riesberg. Over the past several years, I've combined my degrees in acting and somatic psychology to share my sustaining creativity techniques with performers. And now I've decided to share it with a bigger audience that includes you. I believe we are all creative, and this podcast is all about that. I'll be interviewing people from all backgrounds, ages, and creativity experiences to share just how creative we all are. Today, I'll be chatting with Kate Dudzik, cognitive scientist. Please enjoy Kate Dudzik. Welcome to the Sustaining Creativity Podcast. Today, I am here with Kate Dudzik, cognitive scientist, and so much more. Super excited to chat with you today. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I can honestly say I am so excited to be talking with you right now. My goodness.
Oh my gosh. I am so excited to be talking with you too. For all the listeners out there, we were completely nerding out about creativity and cognitive science and neuroscience right before we hit record. So hopefully we can get back into that. But before we dive into that magical world, why don't you take a couple of minutes and let our listeners know a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Amazing. So hi, I'm so excited to nerd out with you today. I am a cognitive scientist. So what that means is I have studied and worked in the field of human thought and cognition for almost 10 years now. It is amazing how time flies.
Wow.
I studied cognitive science in both of my degrees, and I was lucky enough to be at a school where there were actual programs for CogSci. This is a little bit different than how a lot of places do it because it's actually a multidisciplinary field. Mm-hmm. So I was able to study five disciplines at the same time and take all of these together and be like, okay, so how do we look at human thought? And then how do we put it in different contexts and different research areas? I specialized in neuroscience in my first degree. I ended up doing my thesis work in predicting mistakes people would make in gameplay, which was super cool. Yeah. We were looking at thought structures and stuff like that. And then in my second degree, I ended up specializing in artificial intelligence development. So building something called cognitive models, where you build like computer agents based off of what you know about human brains and how they look and how they think and operate. You follow those principles in your code. And then you're like, hey, agent, want to learn something cool? And you watch it go. And I asked my agent to daydream. And I was like, what would this agent daydream about? What would happen here? How would this impact task performance, internal interruptions that are being managed by people all the time, expertise, all that good stuff. So that's a bit about me. That's a bit about where I come from. I like to think about thinking, and I've done my utmost to turn it into my life. So here we are.
Oh my gosh. I love it. And I love all of the connections with thought and creativity and parts of the brain that get activated when we are engaging in creative expression and creative experience and curiosity. And I can't wait to dive into all of that. But first, I have to ask you, what does it mean to you to be creative?
Oh, goodness. Okay. So I love this question. I also don't think that there are any moments in time where we are not being creative in some way. So I'll kind of unpack this.
Yeah.
Coming from this background, I understand that there are certain thought structures that are being applied at all times. You know, we learn certain ways of even thinking about things or considering things, way to solve certain problems that we don't even realize are things being solved because we know them so well, like, you know, picking up a water bottle or something. At one point, we had to learn how to do that.
Right.
But you learn through muscle memory, through all these pathways, solidifying thought structures that this is a solid object. This is how I can grasp it. We do all these things. So we're reappropriating and reusing a lot of these things that exist in the cognitive level of our brain. Super cool. Also means we're being creative literally all the time. You're using these like super cool structures and being like, I'm gonna play Tetris with how this thought's gonna look in my head.
Yeah.
And this can be both good and bad. I mean, If you aren't familiar, I know you are, but if listener, if you aren't familiar, we have these things called heuristics and biases, where sometimes, you know, you can kind of like subconsciously or just like passively categorize something as being one way when it's really not. And you probably could have put a little more thought into the situation, but our impulse is to be like, oh yeah, I know how to get home from here. And it's like, oh no, I found the grocery store. How did we get here? You know, when your brain kind of goes in autopilot, it can be good and bad. So we are always creative. It's just a question of boundaries and rules that we're using to solve that problem space. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally does. And I love it because I don't think about the parts of my brain that are firing or activated when I am in the midst of being creative.
Yeah.
But what we were talking about right before around the satisfaction or the gratification and the dopamine that gets activated when we are engaging in creativity. I wonder if you could share a little bit about that.
Yeah. Amazing. I love this. So getting into the more kind of focused acts of creativity in an artistic or development sense. So say we're making something. So Mari and I geeked out about knitting and painting and all this cool stuff. And it was amazing. And it is amazing. And I love it because when you're thinking about it from a cognitive science perspective or neuroscience perspective, you're looking at the action of creating something that didn't previously exist. So even if you're replicating something from a pattern and you're knitting like a little sweater, or you're drawing a picture from a reference or a referent or something like that, you are doing something. You're creating a skill for yourself. You're honing a skill. In that way, you're building self-efficacy. You're building a relationship with yourself, and you're also following through on a task, which then you're kind of building trust with yourself because you're saying, I want to do this cool creative thing. And here I am doing it. Heck yes. Go me.
Yeah.
Which feels really great. So you're building this relationship with yourself. I mean, we can get into negative self-talk during creative expression later, but for now, like you said, the dopamine, there's a whole lot going on in your brain with this reward system. So you notice a lot of people can feel lost without to-do lists or really enjoy when they get physical types of rewards or even verbal types of rewards for completing a task. This can be like a gold star sticker, or in this case, finishing a project or even finishing a row of knitting. If y'all have ever tried knitting, you make it one stitch at a time with your needles and yarn. And as you go, you can literally see this project grow in front of you. And it can get to the point where it's like a little blanket on top of your lap and you're working on it as you go. And it just started with one little thread and one little loop on your needle. Yeah. And so your brain is now all of a sudden being like, oh yeah, you get a little dopamine hit every time you make a new stitch and you see it come together. It's great. And it's really good for you and your relationship with yourself if monitored properly. It's really cool.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love all of these pieces because I think sometimes we forget the benefits of creativity that are happening kind of behind the scenes that we aren't really paying attention to.
Yeah,
but our system is still, it's still happening to our system. So our system is still being impacted by it. So even if someone thinks, oh, I'm going to sit down and draw. Oh, I have to draw something. Mari tells me I need to draw something. Your system is going to be positively impacted by it. Yes.
Oh, you're so right. And I love the way you framed that, because even if you don't want to do it at first, even if you don't like what you end up drawing, your brain will still get the hits of having done it.
Yes.
You know, you put pen to paper. You did the thing. There's something where nothing existed before. That's amazing. You know?
It's like your body is celebrating for you, or your brain is stuff like your cheerleader.
Just like a little under the hood, like, hey.
Oh my gosh. So much fun. But okay. So I also imagine in your field, you have, you know, creative challenges that you come up against trying to solve problems or just in general. What are some of the creative challenges that you have experienced, and how do you face those challenges?
That's a great question. I think that each problem is unique. The first thing that I like to do is find my boundaries. So what currently exists, what's currently considered possible, and then how do I need to either shape, reshape, or reconsider what's already known? So for example, a lot of people look at the sciences or even like development and tech and stuff like that, and they're like, oh, well, it's science, so it's not creative. But I mean, you, Mari, you have an excellent and very accredited career in sciences, and you know, it takes a whole lot of creativity to come up with, right? Like the application of past research in current practice and techniques to develop a good research question. Even that in itself, we can use an example. So I've obviously done research before. I love it. And it's taking what already exists out there. And again, in my field, it's multidisciplinary. So we get that added bonus of think outside your field. Just because you're looking at a psychological principle, for example, like say working memory, doesn't mean you're restricted to past experiments in the psychology field. You want to look at linguistics. You want to look at neuroscience. You want to look into philosophy. What are people saying about this? Where is it coming from? Are there any principles from computer science that we can maybe look at and jump off of here? Where can we get to? And how can we take all of this stuff together and build a good set of boundaries and rules of prior existing things? And then from there, it's like, okay, we got to get creative. How are we going to take this problem space and pick it apart in a way that actually shows us something that wasn't previously visible, right? So it's not like you're making stuff up. It's that you're looking for what's already there, but you haven't seen because you've been distracted by pre-existing notions of what does or does not exist to be true, or what does not exist to be within previous research, right? So in a lot of ways, it's getting creative all of the time with the way you think about things, with the way you frame your work. And you can't create anything worth doing unless you get creative with it. My goodness, we'd have no products, no new tech. We'd have no new research. Like, it's reason it's still so going.
True. Oh my gosh. I think you'd appreciate this. I read an article the other day about creative genius and how there are fewer creative geniuses in the world today than there were in kind of pre-industrial revolution times. Really? And
what do they mean by creative genius?
It's based on IQ.
Okay.
But it's because of how schools are formed and what we're doing in them and how the class system is stratified and differentiated in today's society, that more people from lower income, you know, groups,
lower socioeconomic
brackets. Yes. Thank you for the phrase.
It's a mouthful. Don't even worry, girl. It's been a long day.
It has been a long day, but that people aren't, they're not accessing people in the socioeconomic class system in the same way that they used to be accessed. Wow. So there, we as a society are missing out on new ideas, new inventions, new products, because we're not paying attention to people from all systems. So
that is so interesting and important. Yes. I love that you brought that up, because I do feel that capitalist society and the commodification of creativity in a lot of ways does impact how it's valued. Like you said, you know, disproportionately impacting lower socioeconomic brackets. What that also gives way to saying is that if you do not have the money for it, you do not get the privilege to get any unnecessary skills or education. And that's all of a sudden saying that what teaching creativity and learning to think abstractly or concept-based as opposed to regurgitation, like reciting facts again, is what, unnecessary? Like, it almost sounds like an oppression tool to me. But like, that's so sad that, that we're not teaching that more. Oh, creativity is something that is in all we do. And it is also a skill. You know, and I think that that's a great point you brought up there is we need to teach that more, and we need to allow it to flourish in a lot of ways.
Yeah, because I think in a lot of educational systems, you're taught a craft or facts or things like that. You're not taught the process or experience of creativity or what it is to generate
great point
new ideas.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love the way you put that, the experience of creativity. And I think that's so important because quite honestly, it's like almost like you get segued, you know, where it's just like, well, you want a career in a future, right? So you got to be good at math or something, right, or you got to be good at computer science, or like, no, no, you're the artsy one, so you get to paint. And it's like, what, why? Like, why do you only get to say you're an artist if you make money off of it? Like, you know, why are we putting people down little trails? And I think you're right about the school system. It's easier, right?
Yeah.
It's easier to treat everyone as the same than it is to be like, hey, maybe you want to knit. Hey, maybe you want to play sports. Like, you know, maybe you can do both. Maybe you can do either. Maybe you can grow into one from starting with the other. Like maybe it's flexible.
Absolutely. I mean, I think in certain fields, that crossover has happened. Like you hear about professional athletes, football players taking ballet class for agility or for very specific reasons. But what if other fields had more of that crossover between the two? I think I could talk about that all day.
Amazing. And that's what we're here for.
Yay.
I love this. So yeah, no, it's so funny. Personally, I am a very creative person. And I have always gravitated towards more scientific pursuits. And it's not that they're not creative. In fact, what attracted me to cognitive science in the first place was because it's such a creative experience. And I think that's, I love the way you distinguish that, because it is the experience of being creative in a very academically challenging way, because now you're keeping track of facts from multiple fields at the same time and seeing if they make sense together and if they don't, and like, you know, drawing these, connect the dots and building these pictures out of different fields. But in the other sense of the way, I'm very musical. I love to paint in my free time. I play the violin, the ukulele. I sing to myself so much, you know, and my apartment is covered in paintings because I've been in fine art classes since I was probably about 8 years old, you know, who's to say? And you know what actually gets me about all this though, is that people are still surprised. They're just like, wait, what? You're artistic? Aren't you a scientist? And I'm like, it's 2022. Why are we putting people in boxes? Like,
right. Why can't my box also be artist and scientist? And like, why can't I have all of the things in my box?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like, looking at you, for example, you're incredibly smart. You've done a lot of amazing work in addictions, in DBT practices. You teach the future generation of people who are going to be helping others and then training others and all this stuff. And you make space to have creative conversations, to do artistic things, to build, to create on your own. And all of those, for some reason, are not all creative. Like, and it's like, really?
Yeah. Right. I think it comes back to that belief of like, only certain people have the creative gene. And I couldn't possibly be creative because of something I was told as a child or something I told myself over a period of time, or, you know, that can be very damaging and it is completely not true. You know?
Yes. Oh my goodness. I can only imagine. You must see this a lot, eh?
Oh yeah. People who don't think they're creative or who think creativity belongs in the performing arts. And to be honest, I have to admit, there was a time in my life where that's all I thought creativity was. It was very relegated to the performing arts, and performers were creatives, and it didn't go beyond that.
Yeah.
And then when I started stepping into the world of creativity and my eyes were opened to what it actually means to be creative or what the experience of being creative is, it all changed.
That's so amazing. I love to hear you say that. And I like that you brought it up too, like the tie of not being quote unquote good enough at it in order to do it.
Yes.
And I don't like, so I feel that we need to create a safe space where it's, you're allowed to be a painter, even if your paintings are not perfect, quote unquote.
Even if you don't show them to anyone in the world.
Yes. Even if they're just for you, even if you scrap them afterwards, it's okay.
Totally.
You're still a painter.
Right.
I think that's beautiful. Just because you don't do it as a profession or full time or at the right proper level. I mean, what is it? It's taking a set of boundaries, a set of materials, and then playing within that space.
And that's where creativity comes alive. When we give people a blank paper and no instruction, that's where overwhelm, anxiety, fear all start to kind of percolate and bubble.
Yes.
But when we say, here is a piece of blank paper, and I want you to turn it into something else. You've given them structure, you've given them boundaries, and that helps that creative space activate.
That is so amazing. I love this. And funny enough, it actually reminds me of a conversation I was having the other day about the stigma against math.
Oh, so,
I know. So there is this thing in North America where a lot of the times when you ask kids how they feel about math, they're going to tell you they hate math. Even if you follow up. So Dr. Joanne Lefebvre, actually, she was the head of my department back in school. She's a math psychologist. And I believe she taught me a lot of the things I know about this, where it's like the way you feel about doing something impacts your ability not only to learn, but to then perform. And so what you're saying kind of makes me think about learning about this, where I'm like, oh gosh, I do remember being a kid and hating math. I can't remember why I hated math in the first place, but certainly didn't help me get better at it.
Yeah.
And I remember the stress and the sweats. And like, when I got there, I was like, oh no, multiplication tables, gosh, you know, now I can do really great long form algebra. I still can't multiply stuff off the top of my head. It's just not going to work for me. And that's okay. But it's the same with creating, where you get to that space and it's like, oh, I'm not a creative. I'm not a creative.
Right.
The same as I hate this. I hate this. You know, I don't want to do this. It's not for me. It's almost like you psych yourself out. You know, if you tell yourself you can't do it, you don't open the space to make mistakes. You then make it a cutthroat, black and white. I don't do this. Not a, I'm learning to do this, or I'm trying to do this.
Right.
Or it's okay that I'm bad at this right now.
Yeah.
Practice makes me better. Right. Like, it's like do you see what I'm saying?
I totally, I mean, I love it. And I love what you also brought up, the like safety piece, because I believe the foundation of creativity is safety.
That's beautiful. If we don't feel safe,
we aren't going to get to the space of being able to take a creative risk, put pen to paper, create something from nothing, give ourselves permission to try something and fail and learn and grow. And when we don't have that psychological safety, the safe space, the environment, the time, all of those pieces. Mm-hmm. So where many people assume creativity starts in brainstorming ideas, for me, creativity starts with feeling safe.
That is so beautiful and so important. I feel like that's a PSA we need to start putting on the trams and stuff. Like, oh my goodness. I actually love that because it makes me think, what a gateway to your inner dialogue.
Yes.
You know, if you really want to know how you feel about yourself, try something creative and new. You know, watch those thoughts come in and see what the heck you're hearing, because my goodness.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a great opportunity to then befriend your subconscious.
Yes. Yeah. And you know what I like about that too, is it's almost like a hack to get to know yourself in a different way, because so oftentimes we don't have access to those thoughts. It's almost like they pass like white noise in our head.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
You know, you go through an autopilot, or you're just, you're so used to having these conversations with yourself that it's just like, oh, wait, people don't say this to themselves all the time. You know? And so as adults, it's almost like, oh, right, sorry, this is a side rant.
Yeah.
It's almost like we forget that we need to learn new things.
Yes.
And it's like, why did we stop trying different sports or learning new things? And by getting out of touch with that state of learning and that state of safety to learn, like you mentioned, we get out of touch with that dialogue of how we're critiquing ourselves in spaces where we don't feel confident or like we have a certain degree of expertise that's appropriate to do it at our age or our space, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, this statistic blows my mind, but I love it. The average 5-year-old asks 120 questions a day.
Oh, I love that.
The average 40-year-old asks 4.
Oh my goodness. Those marriages though.
I know. What?
But that's bonkers. Okay. Okay.
So when we think about, you know, curiosity, at what point do we as adults stop being curious about what's happening in our life, in our world, with people?
Yeah.
And that, I love to remind people, is a form of creativity. Asking questions is curiosity and is a form of creativity. So
absolutely. Oh, that's so beautiful. And I love the way you put that, because I've been reading nothing but research lately on how actually asking more questions helps not only get you out of your own head and your own internal dialogue, but it actually improves the relationship you have with the people around you, your use of media and digital technology, and your interactions in real life. So quote unquote, physical life, as opposed to digital online life. And I really like that you said that the curiosity is creativity, because it is. You know, I always think back to that, the traits of expertise, where one of the traits of a true expert coming from psychology is that an expert knows that they don't know things.
Yeah.
And I think that being confident in yourself is the ability to ask questions like, you know, I don't know how to do a lot of things. I don't know how to sculpt. I've never worked with clay before. That's totally new to me. I can't just walk in and be like, oh yeah, I see how you're doing that.
I don't know. Like, I don't know.
Why is it okay to act like that in other contexts? You know, we assume that we know because we see familiar things. We're like, oh, they're wearing this outfit, so they're probably this type of person, or, oh, they're doing this. We do all these biases come in, and it's like, and then we, what is it? I think it's the confirmation bias, where you're going to look for information to reaffirm your previously held belief.
Absolutely.
You know, like,
yeah. But is there, okay, is there any truth to the belief or idea that our brains will take the path of least resistance?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We lazy.
And thank you for confirming that for me.
Well, you know what? I feel like there's a two part though. Yes, of course. It's going to try to conserve energy. It is still old and outdated software up in there. And that's okay. Yeah. Also, once you know this, it becomes a tool, because then you can say, okay, so my brain's going to usually take the path of least resistance. What do I want that path to look like?
Yeah.
And so then you can create a new normal for yourself where, you know, oftentimes I like going out and being like, I have no idea what that person's going through. I really like that jacket. That looks really good on them. They have good taste. That flat, like, you know, it's instead of being like, oh, you know, that type of person, or, oh, they gave me a face, like, fuck them, they're mean, you know, sorry. But like, you know, instead of making assumptions, you can ask yourself, what do I actually know here? You know, and the more you start making that your automated response, the more it will become your default, right?
Right.
So, you know, those people in life, and they're so great to talk to. And you're just like, you always know what to say. And you're always so sweet and comfortable. Like, my advisor's like this, like, where he's one of the most gentle, kind human beings I've ever met in my life. And he's always like, oh, hey, how are you today? You know, and I'm like, well, I'm okay. And he's like, no, I see the way you're standing. And I'm like, how do you do this? You know, and it's because he pays attention. That's his default, is to watch for body language, to watch for pitch and tone of voice. That's what he's trained himself to do. And so that's become his automated response. So yes, we're lazy. Also, we have the capability to change if we want to.
I love that. That reminder that, yes, we are set up this way. And we can change it if we make a choice to change it and put energy 100%. And effort and get creative about how do we want to react and respond in our life. I love it.
It actually makes me think back to the five-year-old you were talking about that statistic. Because, sorry, I'm just thinking about this here. It's almost like we have to teach the kids not to ask the questions. You know, and you hear a lot of adults and a lot of people going, shh, don't ask those questions, or shh, not now, or shh, that's inappropriate, or shh, you've already asked that, that's enough. And we're teaching children to stop being curious, to stop asking questions when their default is to be curious and it is to ask the questions. So their lazy brain is just like, we need to learn, team.
Yeah.
That's how we're going to default is learning, you know?
Exactly.
Out of people. That's so silly.
I know, because lazy adults don't want to answer a lot of questions.
Apparently, my goodness. No, that's the spice of life. Like, how boring to imagine that you know everything.
I know. I mean, I think you're right. It gets in our way.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's true. I don't know. So when was the last time you learned something new or did something like new for you as a creative?
Like yesterday.
Yes. Oh my God. That's so cool. Okay. I love this.
Yeah.
What was it?
I think
how did your brain feel?
Oh, it's great. Like anytime I make a new recipe that I've never made before or never tried before, I'm like, oh yeah. And then to like eat it and have it taste good and be satisfying is like so success. I'm so proud of myself and have that moment.
Yes.
Like, I kick ass. Yes.
That's amazing. Oh my gosh. I love that dialogue that you had. And I feel like there's so much to learn there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first of all, cooking, something we need to do.
Yes.
Also something we get to do.
Right.
I like the way you framed that. That's so cool. And like think of it as a creative thing. Like you made a new recipe.
Yeah.
You know, that's awesome. Putting different things together in a way you never have before.
Right. And having them come out tasting good is always a win. Sometimes it doesn't happen.
You're speaking to a very bad cook. So like, okay.
So you understand.
I do. I have to use the box thing where they send you the pre-done ingredients and like the cards. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but that then like how you plate it gets to be your creative expression, right?
I do try. I really do.
I love it. Oh my gosh. This has been such an amazing conversation. I just have one last question for you. What does it feel like in your body to be creative?
Authentic.
Authentic. What does that feel like?
I think to me, to be creative is to be in touch with your authentic self, because there are no secrets.
Mm-hmm.
There is no illusion, no false humility, no ego, no overconfidence or regular amount of confidence. It's just you and whatever it is that you're doing. And I think there's peace in that. Letting go of the overhead, you know, all the overhead thoughts, the scaffolding, everything. I think it is to be authentic.
I love it. Oh my gosh. This has truly satisfied my inner nerd, this conversation. I love it.
Thank you too. So you are a pleasure.
If people want to learn more about the things that you do, how could they go about doing that?
Amazing. So you can either find me on LinkedIn and my name will be here, or you can go to my website, which is cognitivekate.com. You can reach me through there. There's a few links. You can send me an email, all that good stuff. This has been so great. Thank you so much for having me. You are amazing to talk to. Thank you for geeking out with me about creativity.
Literally anytime. You are so welcome. And thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me and to answer all my questions about cognitive science and the brain.
Literally anytime. Anytime, girl. We can set up a weekly coffee date.
Yes.
That's great. Like, this is so good.
Yay.
We'll just do one of those stitch things.
We'll do like a meeting. Yeah. Stitch and cognitive science. Oh my God, I love it.
Perfect. Okay. Oh my goodness. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Sustaining Creativity Podcast. We'd love to keep in touch, so follow us on Facebook and Instagram. We are at Sustaining Creativity. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. tag your friends and family so they can listen too. We love to hear from you, so leave your reviews, comments, and questions. Check out our website, sustainingcreativity.com, for upcoming offerings and creativity coaching. Tune in Tuesdays for our next episode. And remember, with creativity, anything's possible.